Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
One of the most resonant and poetic ways to track the madness of our federal government shutdown is to follow exactly where we are in this process by just following the prayers of the Senate chaplain. His name is Barry Black. He is a retired Rear Admiral in the United States Navy. He was head chaplain for the whole Navy when he retired from the service in 2003. That was the same year that he was named chaplain of the United States Senate. So he has been chaplain there for 10 years now. And this past week, on the occasion of this government shutdown, the chaplain has been giving Congress what for about them shutting down the government. He does it in a totally nonpartisan way, and he's always very succinct. But you can kind of see him now escalating his browbeating of them as the days go by. And each new day needs a new prayer to start them off. It started on Friday when the shutdown was still on the other side of the weekend.
Let us pray. Holy God, you created us for freedom, so keep us from shackling ourselves with the chains of dysfunction. Lord, deliver us from governing by crisis.
Deliver us, Lord, from governing by crisis. That was Friday. By Monday, when they were actually closing in on the crisis, the chaplain stepped it up.
Let us pray. Eternal God, as our nation stumbles toward a seemingly unavoidable government shutdown, Lord, lead them away from the unfortunate dialectic of us versus them as they strive to unite for the common good of this land we love.
But that night, Monday night, they did not unite for the common good of this land we love. Shutdown. So then on Tuesday, when it's time for the prayer, he just goes ahead and calls them cynics and cowards.
Let us pray. Be merciful to us, O God. During this legislative stalemate, help our lawmakers to test all things by their conscience in these days that try our souls. Strengthen our weakness, replacing cynicism with faith and cowardice with courage. We pray in your holy name. Amen.
From the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davy company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. He's so green, he takes his life in his hands every time he walks across an intersection. Here he is, Mike Novak.
One more time. Good morning, everybody. Let's get the microphone in place. Save us from the madness as we enter, the sixth day of the government shutdown. And it's just amazing to hear the chaplain, the Senate chaplain, Barry Black, using his opening prayer to just rip a new one in our legislators. And then to hear in the news before this show, you know, he, the cynics and cowards was the words that Chaplin used. I guess we have to throw in the word liars as well now, too, because John Boehner says he doesn't have the votes to pass a clean bill. He's a liar. I don't know how else to put it. The man is a bald-faced liar. He has the votes. He doesn't have the Republican votes, but he has the Democratic and Republican votes to pass a clean bill. Who puts up with this? You know, and then we're going to have the mainstream media saying, well, it's both their faults. And he's standing there lying to the American public and to everybody within sight. It makes me nuts. So there you go. But it makes a lot of people nuts. There's a lot of people who are tense now because of this, because it's just beyond the pale. You know, the inmates are running the asylum. Good morning, everybody. It's a Sunday. We're going to talk about more madness here today, too. But first of all,
but we're going to talk about the good parts of the madness, right?
Well, some good parts. There's some good and there's some bad. You know, the madness going on in LaSalle County, which is frack sand mining. It's not even the fracking. See, we've got
right.
It's not even, we haven't even gotten to the fracking yet, and we got problems. What we have to do to frack so we can have hydraulic fracturing in the state of Illinois is we have to mine the sand that we use to blast underground with water and all these chemicals that cause all these problems. And so what we have to do is tear apart our farmland in other parts of the country, not just in Illinois, as we're going to find out today, but in Wisconsin, it's been happening, Minnesota, other parts of the country. So we blast apart hills and we blast apart ravines and we blast apart our natural areas so that we can recover frack sand and use that. And today, this morning, in just a couple of minutes, we will talk to several people who are fighting that in LaSalle County. Ashley Williams, who's been on the program before, we started a petition to get to Governor Pat Quinn. Peggy Enquist, who lives in Ottawa, has been working hard on this issue. And Jim Tittle, who is the director of a documentary called The Price of Sand. Anybody in the room see it? I saw it.
I did watch it last night.
Good for you. Good for you.
No, I did not.
Okay. That's all right, though.
It'll be on my list, though.
All right. Good. And you should. This is an excellent, excellent documentary.
It's only an hour. You can knock it out, Carol.
Yeah. It's one of the things I like about it. And I'm going to commend Mr. Tittle on this because it doesn't go on forever.
I was excited to get the link, and I apologize I didn't get to see it, but I can't wait.
Okay. And you should. So.
Crazy week.
And so they will talk about what's happening in LaSalle County around not just outside of the entrance of Starved Rock State Park, but in other areas, in Utica. And I mean, the county is getting ready to open up. I call it a sand rush. Get ready for the sand rush in LaSalle County. All right. Second hour, I'm very pleased to have an old buddy of mine back on the show and in studio, Connor Shaw and his son Kelsey from Possibility Place Nursery. We ran into each other this week at a very interesting conference, which was about invasive plants. And that was put together. And by the way, can I get education credit, Master Gardener education credit there, Sarah Batka, for that?
I'm pretty lenient, but
wait, we were learning about invasive plants. This seems like it's totally legit.
Where was it?
at the Chicago Botanic Garden, I'll have you know. It wasn't like it was in my living room or something. It was the Green Industry and Conservation Green Industry and Conservation Address Invasive Ornamental Plants, third annual symposium by the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership.
All right, that sounds
presented
legit.
Presented in partnership with the Chicago Botanic Garden. It was 10 hours of my life.
I thought you just ran into him at the Dominic's.
No.
I know. It does sound like, yeah, we sat and had a glass of wine and we were talking plants.
No. Does that count?
That's what it sounded like.
No.
I went to
it
him.
Was all about how you build it. It was how you build it.
I know.
It's all about marketing, Mike.
I know. I totally.
It all comes down to marketing.
Can I start that one over? Yeah. So Connor was at this seminar.
This incredible seminar,
this incredible,
hosted by
the Chicago Botanic Garden.
See, it's in the marketing.
And Kathy McGlynn, who's been on the show with the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership. I want credits for that, baby. I'm getting credits for that. Education credits, CLEs. Anyway, Connor's on the show, and he runs a thing called Possibility Place Nursery in Moni. And he sells native plants. And he's been doing this for 26 years, and he's got some perspective on it. And we'll probably also talk about some of those plants that we talked about at the seminar, this wonderful seminar that I went to at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Did I tell you about this?
Wow, I wonder if you could get continuing education credits for those.
You know, I think I'll ask Sarah Batka if that's a possibility.
Right, it does. It's good. I'm good.
It sounds good.
All right.
Golden,
Mike. I'm in. And you'll be interested in some of the plants that were mentioned as being invasive, stuff that people buy every day at nurseries, take them home, plant them, and then they show these scientific studies about how they spread. Pretty terrifying stuff. So, and just before we get to our guests, I do have to respond to, I got a postcard. How often do you get a postcard? And it was typed. It was put in a typewriter.
That's really cool.
Look at this.
I know. It's lovely.
It is. And it's from Stuart Simon. And it gives me a chance to explain some things that I do. Like today at the beginning of the show, it was obvious what I was playing, which was, yes, Gesundheit. I'm glad you turned off your mic before you did that. Before the show, I always play something that relates to something. Maybe in the show, maybe not, maybe something in the world that's going on. And this week, of course, was the chaplain. And it was Rachel Maddow doing this wonderful piece on the chaplain and his prayers in Congress this week. Last week, I played something that was actually from The West Wing, the TV show The West Wing. And it was about you might have heard, I won't play the whole thing, but it started something like this.
Plain and simple, we'd like President Bartlett to aggressively support legislation that would make it mandatory for every public school in America to teach geography using the Peters projection map instead of the traditional Mercator.
Give me $200 and it's done.
Really?
No.
All right.
It's so funny, I randomly watched that episode last week.
Did you really?
Yeah.
All right.
That map is crazy.
The Peters projection versus the Mercator projection. Mm-hmm. And this is about science. Okay? That's why I play it.
She blinded me with science.
And I got this postcard from Stuart Simon. He says, "Dear Mr. Novak," and by the way, Mr. Simon is spelled N-O-W, but that's okay. "I tuned into your program about 5 minutes late Sunday, and I heard that Mercator's map was being discussed in a slightly disparaging manner. Although it was not explained in my Chicago grammar school, I much later discovered why it was the greatest map ever made. In the years when a compass was the only instrument on ships, a straight line connecting two points gave the direction in which to sail from one point to the other. This was not the shortest distance between the points, but it is the only map for which direction is constant!" Exclamation mark. Sincerely, Stuart Simon. And he had a couple of little notes that he wrote here. And I appreciate your passion for the Mercator map. But at the Peters projection was pointed out, it shows the relative sizes of the continents. And that was the point.
Right.
Is that you get to see what the size really is of these bodies on Earth. And in the Mercator projection, Greenland looks larger than Africa. And the stuff on the north is given undue weight versus southern hemisphere, et cetera, et cetera. And the point being made in that episode was that when we see things big, we assume they're more important, which made Europe more important than Africa and South America. And that is this bias that we have been operating under for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And that's the point of that. And that's why I played it. I thought it was fascinating.
It is interesting. Have you seen the Dymaxion map?
You want to bring one in?
I can bring one in.
Can we put one on the wall here?
It's made in triangles. So it's Buckminster Fuller came up with the Dymaxion map.
Okay.
My boyfriend.
Buckminster Fuller. All right. So that's why I did that. Welcome to the show, everybody. Let's get to our topic of conversation. And I want to start by bringing in Ashley Williams. Ashley, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. It's a pleasure as always, Mike.
It's great to have you back on the show. And I have to ask you, the last time you were on, I believe it was July 28th, you had put this petition together that you wanted to send or to deliver to the governor, and you had gotten over 15,000 signatures. Think about that, 15,000 signatures, and you can still sign up for it if you go to my website, mikenovak.net, and go to this week's show. I put the link in. Look for the line that says, Governor Quinn, stop the Mississippi sand frack sand mine near Starved Rock. And you're still taking signatures, aren't you?
Yes, I am. It's over 16,000 now. I don't know the exact number, but it's fast approaching 17,000. So it is still up. I'm using it now kind of to connect with other people about the proliferation of the frack sand industry here and those upcoming ones like in Utica with Northern White Sand. So, yeah, it is up there and everyone can still find it. So
let's give it the Mike Novak bump. And get a bunch of people to not quite the same as the Stephen Colbert bump, but not even in the ballpark, actually.
it's a pretty dynamic bump. I do say so myself.
I hope you'll go there and sign on. Meanwhile, you're still dealing with this issue. And as a matter of fact, let me bring in your colleague, and that is Peggy Enquist. Peggy, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
You guys, and you can handle this any way you want. I know that you've got a meeting coming up this Thursday. And you're going to show the film, and we're going to talk to the director in just a second. It's called The Price of Sand. And it's, the meeting, just so everybody knows right away, and you can find this on my website, is, Illinois Valley Community College, room C316, 815 North Orlando Smith Road in Oglesby. And the idea is to show the price of sand. And actually, I'm gonna start with you, Peggy. Why are you doing this on Thursday?
Well, I have to give credit to Ashley. This is kind of her baby to show this price of sand. And the reason is because it shows actually the economic costs of sand mining. Most people think, oh, gee, it's all about jobs and the 39 jobs we heard that Mississippi Sand was going to bring to the county. But when you stop and look at what it actually costs the county in terms of loss of tourism and all the other associated costs to our environment, you have to wonder, is it worth it?
Yeah, and I'm glad you gave Ashley credit because I do know that she put this together. Ashley, you and Cynthia Oakley with the Sierra Club, yes. Illinois chapter, right?
Yes, yeah, me and Cindy Oakley will be hosting it. And yes, the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club and Ivy Sustainability, our own organization there on campus, is going to be sponsoring it. So we're incredibly grateful.
Which campus is that?
The Illinois Valley Community College, the main campus.
Okay.
There's Ivy Sustainability's organization there.
Yeah, just making sure people know that. And
what time will that be?
Oh, good point. Yes.
That's not on the website.
Oh, it's not.
That will be at 6:30.
Oh, my goodness.
On October 10th, Thursday. Okay. Yep.
All right, 6:30. And it's is this I know the county has been having meetings and is actually has another one on Monday tomorrow at Otter Creek Township Hall. And then another one on Wednesday, October 16th at the LaSalle County Governmental Complex. Have you been following these meetings and what is the county trying to find out, Peggy?
Well, Mike, I've been to every one of these, what the county is calling open houses. They've gone out to the different townships in the county to try and get some citizen feedback on their revised comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan was done by a consulting agency 5 years ago, and without spending the $90,000 that it cost them 5 years ago, they're attempting to update it by going out and talking to people in the county. But as in many things, we're not getting any input. People aren't showing up. And by the way, the next meeting is on Tuesday rather than Monday. But
oh, is it?
Yes.
Wow. I had the 7th is what I had, and I'm sorry if I misspoke. So we'll need to change that on the website. So is that October 8th at Otter Creek Township Hall?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We will fix that on my website. And as we post on Facebook and Twitter now, we will make sure that we have the correct time. A couple of things. First of all, you say that people are not showing up for these?
No. No. Oh. At the last meeting, not sure the name of the township, but it was actually in Mendota. And the after you subtracted out all of the LaSalle County board people, those of us there regarding the sand mines, the unions, operators unions that come to every meeting, there was one citizen.
Yikes.
One.
So what the county board comes away with is, the citizens really don't care. But the unions care, and the unions want the jobs, and
correct.
Wow, well, this is a no-brainer. It's an easy call. And I should mention that at this point, the county of LaSalle has placed a moratorium on new frac sand mines, correct?
They have, but it will only last until the new comprehensive plan is completed.
And they're hoping to do that by when?
Probably by the end of December.
Mm-hmm. So here we've had a bunch of meetings. There's at least half a dozen here. You're saying people are not showing up for these. So does this tell you, Peggy, that the citizens of LaSalle really don't care if the county is turned over to the mining interests?
To be honest, I don't think most people realize how important the comprehensive plan can be to stop, sand mining. The comprehensive plan covers a wealth of items from transportation to tourism to farming. And an interesting point is the main goal of the LaSalle County Comprehensive Plan is preserving farmland. They talk extensively about the fact that 85% of the county is farmland. However, if you look at the census, you find that less than 3% of the LaSalle County population are farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So the rest of the county, we live in slightly urban areas, what we call urban, Ottawa, LaSalle, Peru, Marseilles, Mendota, and these people are the people who should be coming out and having their comments heard about frac sand mining, and we're just not getting their attention. Hopefully what Ashley's doing will help change that.
And Ashley, what has been your view of this? What are you seeing?
Oh, I mean, I'm exactly where Peggy's at. It's just this issue. People are just so ill-informed. This issue has really been trivialized.
And it's you know, it's been part of our history for well over a century now. And it continues to be, you know, accepted. Yet these are not mom and pop, so-called mom and pop sand mine operations any longer. These are large scale hyper mining operations. And, you know, as the reliance on high volume horizontal drilling rises, you know, the need for hyper sand mining, you know, continues to climb. And, as with Illinois Sand, they're setting a precedent with annexing of these cities. And as you were mentioning, this is not just no longer exclusively Mississippi Sand. We're talking over 70 corporations approaching our local governing bodies about setting up.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point. And maybe, Peggy, you can address that. It seems when Mississippi Sand came outside of Starved Rock and said, this is where we want to dig, they went to the county and it became mm-hmm. a big deal in the county. It sounds like the companies have decided that's not a good way to go because it's too public. Maybe we should do an end around and just annex parts of cities, and that, it's a lot easier that way. Is this something you're seeing?
We definitely think that that's what's happening because we have heard from Ottawa that they have received over 70 inquiries regarding property for sand mining, but yet the county asserts that they've had no inquiries.
So that it sounds like, kind of dealing with the county turned out to be a bad move on Mississippi Sand's part. So the strategy has evolved over the last year and a half. It's like, don't deal with the county. You're just going to run into a roadblock there. It'll be a lot easier if you just annex parts of these towns. Wow.
Right. Because now, in the situation of ADM Artco, who are going to be shipping the sand that Mississippi Sand produces, they just got themselves annexed into Ottawa. The only benefit is that Ottawa is able to collect an impact fee from the company, which the county, by state statute, is not allowed to do. So Ottawa has put in some restrictions, but they're perceived as not being nearly as tough. And as you say, it's an end around the county. And much easier for Utica, I hate to say it, but it appears that Utica is just selling themselves out to the sand mines, anywhere they want to put one.
That is Peggy Enquist. She's an Ottawa citizen and activist. Ashley Williams is also on the phone. It's time to bring in Jim Tittle, who is the director of the Price of Sand, and I will do that in just a couple of minutes. I see we've already got a phone call. If you're interested in this issue, the number is 773-763-9278. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, and we will get to the reason why this is so important with Jim Tittle in just a second. Now, a simple change in your lawn care practices this fall can create a carpet of green next spring that's safe for children and pets thanks to Milorganite. When the weather begins to cool, your lawn starts to build back its root system, and boy, the lawn loves the rains we got yesterday. Your lawn needs a little extra nourishment at this time of year. That's why the experts agree that fall is the best time to fertilize your lawn. In fact, if you're going to do it, this is if you want to do a low input, just fertilize it in the fall and forget the rest of the year. Some people say, really, that's all you need. Now, you'll get some argument on it. I'm just telling you what I hear sometimes. Most lawn fertilizers release their nutrients quickly, which produces lots of clippings and reduces root growth. But Milorganite, an organic nitrogen fertilizer, feeds your lawn slowly throughout the fall, providing more green color with fewer clippings and maximum recovery from summer stress. It's a trick golf course superintendents have used for decades. Milorganite applied now will help your lawn green up faster in spring while helping it recover quickly from winter damage. You'll improve your lawn's overall health and greatly reduce weed problems. So give your lawn the food it needs, Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Hi, this is Ron Calvio from Mighty House. Are you looking for a new ride? Looking for a cool ride? Looking for a ride that you can plug in so you can flip off the guy at the gas station? Well, here's your chance to get one for as little as $40. The Illinois Solar Energy Association is raffling off a 2014 Chevy Volt, and only 3,000 tickets will be sold. So how do you win? Go to illinoisolar.org and click on the link to the Chevy Volt raffle. You can buy one ticket for $40, two tickets for $60, or four tickets for $100. All raffle proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout the state of Illinois. The winner will be drawn at the ISEA member meeting on December 7th, 2013. Again, that's illinoisolar.org to buy your tickets and to get all the small print details.
And I'm sure you have a couple of quick comments on that, Lisa.
I get so excited when I hear that. I am so proud that Ron Cowgill made that spot happen.
Yeah.
The Illinois Solar Energy Association is selling, if you weren't listening, tune in. Illinois Solar Energy Association is raffling off an electric vehicle as a fundraiser, and we're kicking off. We've already got it up on our website. You can buy online.
I'm going to enter.
We're only selling 3,000 tickets.
I know, so get them quickly.
Yes.
I like those odds. And me too. And the website?
IllinoisSolar.org.
Okay, and do it today.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure. You're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees about what you can expect when you give the Care of Trees a call. One, they will arrange to have a certified arborist meet with you to evaluate your trees. By the way, they're the only tree care company to make confirmation calls and measure their results. Two, they come to your place and do an assessment of your tree care needs. Three, they'll provide you with recommendations and give you a price estimate on the spot. Four, your tree care work will be scheduled based on factors like the best time of the year to perform the service, your availability, and more. During the work, your needs will be continually reevaluated. Five, the Care of Trees will contact you after the work is done to make sure you were happy with the work. If you weren't satisfied, they will continue to do it until you are. And it's hard to imagine much better service than that. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
We're walking by the river, by the sky high piles of sand, past the hot hair wearing man about his dream, his master plan. Not just piles of sand, he said, the big piles of gold. We're gonna beat some miles, move idle hands, move us up the totem pole. We'll even breathe some palms if you wanna play some ball in the big leagues with the big boys, smoking fat to see a guy. Let's loosen your belt, son. Got brass and blues. Three steps to the east.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, and at this point I will bring into, I just can't believe I did that. I just lost, I believe that I sent Peggy away. I think, Carol, you're going to have to get her back here. But I've got Jim Tittle on the line, and that song you're hearing, the Freck Sand Blues, is from his documentary called The Price of Sand. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Thank you for letting me see the film, which Sarah did as well, too. And I surely enjoyed it. I mean, you know, if you can enjoy something that is so disturbing
and heartbreaking
and that music is just one of a number of songs that you got, I assume, friends and colleagues to put together so you could put your
people
film.
I didn't even know, actually. I had a contest.
Tell me about the contest.
Oh, you know, I spent 2 years making this film, and I'd go out alone sometimes for 3 or 4 days at a crack, go out in the country and meet people who were involved or, you know, fighting sand mining. And so I drove a lot of hours and spent a lot of time alone on the back roads. And one day I was driving along and I just, that John Prine song, Paradise,
uh-huh,
into my head about mountaintop removal, you know, in coal country. And I thought, geez, you know, there's a lot of artists and musicians living out here. Maybe if I had a contest, I could get some music for my film. So I put up $100 on my Facebook page. I said, you know, $100 for the best frac sand song. And I had a contest that ran for a few months. And I got about, oh, I don't know, 15 or 16 entries. And from that, I got the music for my film.
Wow.
It's on Corey's song.
Yeah. And you wrote to me, actually. You said John Prine's Paradise, mm-hmm, his lyrics were, then the coal company came with the world's largest shovel, and they tortured the timber and stripped all the land. Well, they dug for their coal till the land was forsaken. Then they wrote it all down as the progress of man.
Did you happen to see the photo that I included, too?
Yeah.
The sand mine there at Tunnel City, down there at Tolma. That's a 1,000-acre mine that's being built, or I think it's finished now. It's built by Uniman, which is one of the world's largest mining companies.
And I put a bunch of the photos from your website, the Price of Sand website, up on mine. Happy to do it because it's so important. I love, and you did some aerial photos, which are just, stunning. And as Sarah said, kind of disturbing. Here's another song that you, had. I'll do the very quickly play. This is called, The Hills Are Gone.
I see the hills are gone. I see the hills are gone. They took away where we played. The hills are gone.
And that's literally what's happening, isn't it, Jim?
Absolutely. Yep. They're just taking entire hills.
Because it's easier just to, you know, lop off the top of the hill to get to the sand, isn't it?
But it's the trees, too.
Oh, yeah, they clear cut. It's major. I think one of the big things that people don't realize, you know, they think sand mining and they just yawn. It doesn't sound very exciting. It doesn't sound very dangerous. But what's happening here is hilltop removal. You know, they're taking entire bluffs. They're digging entire pits. And the amount of material that's being removed is just amazing. I don't know if you've seen or if you remember the part of my film that shows how many trucks pass through a rural intersection
in 40 minutes. Right.
Yeah. If anybody wants to see that, I have a YouTube channel. It's called The Price of Sand. And that video, that clip is called How Many Trucks. And it shows all these semi-trucks going through this intersection out in the middle of nowhere. And that's just a typical, I think there were 21 trucks in 40 minutes, mm-hmm, semis. And that went on all day long. Yeah, all day long. And as far as I can tell, day after day after day.
And
you look at the roads, and they're trash.
Now, you did your film basically about the situation in Wisconsin and how it's bleeding over into Minnesota, but
mm-hmm, right,
the same thing really applies to Illinois, doesn't it?
Well, I think so. You know, again, there's a need for this. Energy industry is going nuts over gas and oil in North Dakota and Texas and out east. And in order to get most of it, what they're doing is they're fracking. And fracking requires propant. And the most common propant is silica sand. And so the price is going up. There's a huge amount of speculation. And big industries and, you know, investment funds, speculators are all putting money into this. They want to make their money fast.
Mm-hmm.
So they're opening as many mines as they can. You know, it's incredible. It's just out of whack.
It is. And let me go back to Peggy, and I'm glad we've got you back, Peggy.
Yes.
Do you think that people are aware that the whole nature of their lives is going to change with this, that the trucks will be rumbling, that there will be this silica dust in the air, which is one of the things that you, I know you guys are trying to accomplish, is to get monitoring of the silica dust. And that's one of the hardest things to do. Are the folks you talk to aware of these issues?
No, not at all. Not at all. And
And the trucks that are going to be rumbling by, and by the way, I did see that piece, Jim, that you have on your website. It's incredible. They don't realize that that's what our Route 71 is going to look like. This is supposed to be the scenic route to Starved Rock, and we're going to have these sand trucks rumbling up and down Route 71 between Mississippi Sand and ADM, who is going to be shipping all of this sand.
All right, before we move forward, since this is obviously a powerful piece of film, a powerful clip, let's make sure I've got the link to that and the folks can access it. Jim, tell me where they can find that again.
On YouTube, I have a channel called The Price of Sand, same title as the film, and the price of this particular clip is how many trucks?
All right, and what we are going to do right now is pop that on Facebook. We're going to pop it on Twitter so folks have a chance to look at that and see what the real consequences of this are. And
there's one other thing I should mention.
Yeah.
And that is that, you know, people talk dust, they talk trucking, and the other side says, yeah, but we need jobs. You know, this is all about improving our economy.
Yeah.
This is about helping people that are out of work. Not really true. Not true at all. And on the same YouTube channel, I have 7 clips. They're very short. They're part of a debate with a man named Dr. Power, who's an expert in the economics of mining. He's from the University of Montana. And the Institute for Agriculture.
Jim, your cell's going out.
Sorry. you can't hear me.
No, okay, now try. It seems Bummer. Clear again. Tell me who again you talked to.
All I'm saying is that there is a think tank in the Twin Cities that commissioned a very respectable economist to do a study of frac sand mining in Wisconsin. And what he came up with might surprise you. And that is that frac sand mining actually is a net negative on most economies. In other words, it takes more money out than it puts in.
Yeah. Now, how do I get a hold of that study?
Well, that's the Institute of, I can send you a link, but it was done by the Institute of Agriculture and Trade Policy. Let me see here. The man's name is Dr. Power, and I'll be glad to send you a link. But I have several small interviews with Dr. Power on my YouTube channel as well.
Oh.
And those address very specific little things that people have talked about, you know, like the jobs, the economic multipliers, things like that.
Okay.
So it's not as if the economics of this, that the benefits are a slam dunk. The companies that are trying to build sand mines say that this is a great economic boon to the local economy. It's not.
All right. Listen, here's what I'm going to try to do. Ashley, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. I'm actually going to put you on hold for a second because I want to get another phone call in here very quickly because we are running out of time. So, I don't know if let's try that again. Boy, because I know what will happen. I'll lose one of you guys if I don't. All right, let's lock in. Well, I lost her anyway. Okay, that's the way these things work. Let's go to Dan in Chicago. Dan, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, Mike. I wanted to just take a second to put together the two sides of the sand mine fracking and then the problem with fracking itself, which also has to do that our the plate that we live on, the granite, is mostly sandstone. And the horizontal fracking, once they go in there, it breaks up the bits of remaining granite. And granite is what protects the aquifer. So when you break up the sand, when you start breaking up the granite and just going through sandstone, it's an automatic passage for all of the 500 toxic chemicals to go into the groundwater. Our granite is under attack anyway, just from the natural forces. Where the North American plate is called the Creighton plate, and it's being ground from the Pacific and the Atlantic plate. Mm-hmm.
All right, that's all I can take on that. It's a very interesting comment, Dan. I appreciate it. I'm going to let you go and go to Kelly. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning. Kelly?
Hello.
Yeah, this is Cody Dempsey. I live in Utica, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And the water contamination issue we have, the former speaker was talking about, we have with coal. Illinois Sand, now Northern White Sand, denied that there was coal there, and they found it anyway, kind of. And now they're threatening to put it in a local landfill right down the road, I guess, or they don't specify where. And there's a hearing tomorrow at 3 o'clock and 6:30 at Starved Rock Lodge. It's held by the Illinois EPA, and it's over their discharge permit, their NPDES permit, to allow them to discharge water from this sand slash coal mine into a tributary that empties north of across the river from Starved Rock State Park on the Illinois River Valley, in our beautiful Illinois River Valley.
Okay.
And, this land has been also, it goes into the I&M Canal National Heritage Corridor on its way. And the issue is that this land was polluted in the 1940s with coal, and they are seeking to add more of the same pollutants to it. And we're concerned that violates the Clean Water Act of further impairing a stream that's already polluted.
I appreciate you calling, and Kelly, your cell was also going. We're having cell issues today, but I'm so glad he brought that up, and I want to make sure that Ashley and Peggy what's with these phones, okay? What is with these phones? Ashley, I apologize. Don't even bother. We'll get her back. I'm going to thank her for being on. Peggy, thank you.
I'm
glad that he just brought this up, because, yes, there is a hearings tomorrow to check out, to discuss a national pollutant discharge elimination system permit for Illinois Sand Company. And, again, that's at Starved Rock.
It's right at the lodge.
Right at the lodge. And I believe it was 3:30 and 6:30.
I think it's 3 and 6:30.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I thought I had that here, and I don't. And there's just so much going on. It's just amazing. That's all the time we have. And, folks, you should go, check out The Price of Sand. You can order that, through, which is the company, Jim?
GreenPlanetFilms.org.
Green Planet Films, I've got the link to Green Planet Films and The Price of Sand. You can go check out some of the clips on YouTube. Look up The Price of Sand. I want to say that I really enjoy it. One of the things that is amazing in the film is you show how people get pitted one against the other in these areas. You know,
it's devastating.
Yeah, because somebody gets the money, they sell out. The other person doesn't get the money. They're left with the dregs and the trucks and the blowing sand, and the economy that goes south and the loss of the natural areas. It's just very, very sad. And so, you know, my advice to folks is think about what you're doing and what you want to come to your neighborhood, because be careful what you wish for if all you wish for is jobs. Peggy, thank you so much. Do you have any final words you want to put in here?
I just would like to say that I sure wish people would get a little bit more involved. This is going to be very devastating to our area, and people just need to realize what's going to happen and get out there and speak up.
Okay, speak up. Thank you both, Jim Tittle.
Thank you.
And
and
Peggy Anquist and Ashley Williams, who I accidentally knocked off. I don't know why these phones are like this, but they do this to me every week. We will be talking more about this, I'm sure. Have a great Sunday.
Okay. You too. Bye bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
It's Dr. Wally's Tip of the Week, brought to you by Bertholdt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village. Wally isn't a real doctor. You'll never find his name in the who's who of MDs. Wally says that this fall, as you get ready to cut back and clean up your perennial gardens, consider leaving your coneflowers and black-eyed Susans in place as a food source for the birds. And I agree with him. Don't be neatness freaks. Leave them up. Wally deadheads some of his coneflowers and sticks the seed heads into his chain link fence, creating feeding stations for overwintering birds. In the spring, volunteer plants are likely to come up in these areas that you can transplant and use to expand your planting beds. Cut back any perennials that have foliage diseases like bee balm and phlox with powdery mildew. and you want to cut them back to 3 inches above the ground. Dispose of the foliage and do a good cleanup of the area to help eliminate overwintering disease pathogens. Don't forget to clean your pruners with rubbing alcohol or bleach. I personally prefer rubbing alcohol. Bertold's Garden Center is at 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. Look for the iconic windmill out front or go to bertoltsgardencenter.com. Bertolt's, get green. Let's get growing.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
When the Sandman comes, he sprinkles sand in our eyes, brings sweet dreams filled with pretty lies. While how dimes and nickels
might. It's another song from The Price of Sand. I hope you get a chance to take a look at that film. Let's bring in meteorologist Rick DeMaio. In your case, we're not talking about sand. We're talking about rain and
sun. Hey, Mike, a lot of fracking deals with a lot of weather. Trust me, when they go out and they frack, they got to know what the weather's going to be. So that's actually, weather plays a huge part of the fracking industry, believe it or not.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What things do they need to be aware of when?
Well, they need to be aware of potential heavy rain. They need to be aware of potential runoff. They need to know about the amount of moisture in the ground from a standpoint of, you know, whether or not the soil is going to, you know, basically give way in some parts, and basically the overall conditions of the workers, you know, while they're actually doing the fracking. So
yeah,
there's a bunch of different firms out there that actually employ weather companies or weather firms, you want to call that, that help them with that. So I mean, it's a big circle, and I have to applaud you once again because I've been listening to your discussion for the last half hour, and it's there's nothing else like it on the air. So hats off to you, Mike, again.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. And there's nothing else like you on the air, too, because I'm serious, because, you know, when you hear, and people write to me all the time about they love your weather reports, because it's not just weather, it's the climate as well. And you look at things in the big picture.
And sports.
Well, yeah, and sports. Yeah,
And thank you for that. And really, really part of what's been going on over the last couple of days across the western United States, believe it or not.
Wow.
This huge storm that came in from the Pacific Northwest was actually a remnant of a typhoon that started all the way out near Taiwan and Japan about 10 days ago. And the warm waters of the North Pacific allowed this energy to move all the way upstream over the top of the ridge, down the trough, almost like a roller coaster, and intensified. And look at the amount of snow that we got across portions of the high plains and the western, you know, the northern Rockies. Great snow for them. This is what they want this time of the year. And for us, beneficial rains, inch and a half at O'Hare, actually inch and a half at Pewaukee, 9/10 at O'Hare, 2.5 inches and around Oak Brook. You go further west, not as much came down. But on top of that, the soil temperature, Mike, which is, I like to talk about every once in a while, Under 4 inches of ground at the Botanic Gardens, the soil temperature is a mind-blowing 74 degrees. That's amazing.
Unbelievable.
Inside, it's about 68 degrees. So it's been very warm, and the soil is obviously responding to it. And this is great news for the gardens and the grass, because you see the grass has gotten really green, but these roots are getting further down into the soil, using the rain that we've got, using the warmth that we got, and setting ourselves up to get through the winter season. So nothing but beneficial news short term from the Weather Department.
Well, let me put you at ease here, because I know we're backed up against the news at the top of the hour. Mm-hmm. But because I went so long with that conversation on the frac sand, I want to go a couple minutes longer with you after 10 o'clock, if that's all right.
Yeah.
With you. Okay.
Yeah, we can do that. I got tons of stuff to do. We'll talk after 10.
And one of the reasons I want to do that is the reason is the things you're mentioning right now, which is that soil temperature, mm-hmm. which is so warm. And I'm bringing in Connor and Kelsey Shaw from Possibility Place Nursery, and they deal with native plants, and they can talk about the reaction of some of those plants to this, especially trees and shrubs, because this is a good time of year to plant those. And it's amazing that you can get into October. I was walking yesterday. Oh, and the other thing I got to tell you is that storm that came through yesterday.
Oh, was that like the most intense lightning show you've ever seen before? And
oh,
the thunder
my
was amazing.
Goodness. Well, first of all, you scared my kitty to death, okay? But poor little cat was under the desk and cowering and just didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah, that was some of the most, I probably have to say, the loudest lightning I've ever heard. The loudest thunder and the brightest lightning I've ever heard. I got to get it right, Rick.
Yeah. No, it was. It was really intense, and of course it knocked out my internet. So I'm putting the show together yesterday. I had to go out to Panera so I could get internet.
And you ordered what, like 18 things of breaded soup so you can continue to sit down in your chair? Is that it?
Well, I just ordered just some soup and a half a sandwich and then sat there for a very long time putting stuff together. So I want to that and that storm, which is part of that storm that dumped.
Right.
At last I saw was 37 inches of snow in Lead, South Dakota.
48, Mike.
Oh, my goodness. See, I'm behind the times. Wow. All right. Well, we want to talk about that. So hang on.
Yeah,
I'm going to get back to you after the news. That's Rick DeMaio, our meteorologist. He'll have the forecast right after 10 a.m. Sorry for those of you heading into church. But he will do that, and we'll have a little more of a conversation about this, because it's all tied in, folks. It's the variability of the weather is the story itself. And as I said before, Connor Shaw and Kelsey Shaw from Possibility Place Nursery are next as well. So stay tuned.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Ah, welcome back. It's pretty exciting in here. We have leaks that have entered the studio. No, I'm not talking about the rain coming in through the roof. I'm talking about the plants that you eat. Leeks. Thank you, Connor and Kelsey Shaw. They brought in leeks. What do we got here? We got leeks. We got a bag of potatoes. What kind of potatoes did you guys grow? What are these? Oh, I guess turn on your mic. That would help, wouldn't it? Okay. There we go.
Kennebec.
These are big.
I've never heard of such a thing.
How'd you get them so big?
Can you show?
Look at the size of this.
Oh, we'll have to take pictures.
It's huge.
It's enormous.
That's the biggest one, of course.
Yeah.
But see, here's another one. This one is, look at that. These are beautiful potatoes. Did you harvest them this morning?
Yesterday morning.
Yesterday morning?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
You have to sacrifice, some form of like garden pixie or whatever to get them that large, though.
Because we grew them in our community garden this year, and I'm still learning about growing potatoes. There's some sort of art to it. You can pull that microphone a little closer there, Connor. There's obviously science. There's agronomy, and there's magic as
and
well.
And there's persistence.
Yeah, I guess. Well,
plus about 40 years of sheep droppings.
Ah, yeah. There we
That's
go.
That's what's missing.
You know, they tell me that about, oh, and I have to tell you, I'm glad you mentioned that because it reminded me that it was Ken Benson from Triton College who said the secret to growing giant pumpkins is three things, manure, manure, manure. And that sounds like it's your secret to potatoes as well.
I would think that that's pretty much the secret. People have to kind of get used to the idea of growing things in manure.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't have...
You don't have it lying around most
right,
times.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's not... I can't go out in my alley and it's by the back,
well,
by
might,
the garage.
That'd
you
be
know?
A disturbing thought.
That
I
would
think.
Really,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what that is.
But in actuality, it's mostly leaf compost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I use now because I don't have any sheep anymore, so we have leaf compost.
You used to have sheep?
Oh, yeah.
150, something like that?
About 100, yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. How long ago was that?
Till 94.
But we just, my brother and I just, we didn't want to chase them around when they got out anymore.
I was going to say, yeah, so it was when Kelsey was old enough to say no.
Yeah, it was old enough, we said no way earlier than that, but it was more like we weren't doing it, and he was tired getting up.
Because that's what happened with my uncle's farms, or with his cows.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. As soon as my cousins were old enough to say no.
Well, we got rid of the cow after it dragged my mother across the yard.
Well, the other problem,
it dragged your mother across the yard.
No, how did that happen? They're pretty docile creatures.
He was there. I wasn't. I just heard about it. I was sleeping. I didn't get up.
We had an Angus cow that had the ability to get out on a consistent basis and would then come to the front door and moo.
Look for you.
And so Joe decided one morning that she was going to take this cow back and. And she unfortunately put attached a cord to it and then wrapped it around her hand, and the cow's tail then went straight up and off they went.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Nobody got hurt, but it was rather intriguing.
So it's like water skiing across the yard.
Yeah. I got a feeling this is going to be a really fun hour. That is Connor and Kelsey Shaw from Possibility Place Nursery in Moni, Illinois. Just to let everybody know who's listening or just tuned in, it's the Mike Novak Show, and my crew is three quarters here today. It's just amazing. Lisa Albrecht is in studio, our alternative energy expert. Sarah Batka, Chicago Master Gardener Coordinator. Carol Brewer, who does everything. She is whatever you assign to her, she's answering the phones. And are you also online? Or are you just, I know phone duty was pretty intense the first hour.
Yeah, it was intense.
Sorry about that, about dropping those lines. I don't know why, because I was doing everything I'm supposed to do, hit hold and stuff, and I was still knocking them off the line.
Mike, you're helping make my job more exciting. That's what you're like, I'm going to keep Carol busy.
I'm going to keep Carol busy by knocking phone, and those poor guests who kept getting cut off, and then you had to call them back.
Yeah, no, actually, I helped your guests right now get here today. So that was me that you talked to on the phone this morning.
Oh. What? Who?
Oh, were there directions needed?
Oh, you guys?
Were you guys lost?
Did
this
you
morning?
Guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was me.
Good. Good. I'm glad I'm.
I appreciated that. Thank you very much.
No problem.
You got Carol on the phone and not me.
And of course, the other part of the team who's indispensable is Rick DeMaio, who is still on the line. And Rick,
yeah,
say hello
Mike,
to
the,
yeah,
Mike. The phone is working. Okay.
Thanks.
Were you practicing that?
He
that
was.
Very well done.
He came up with that last night. In fact, last night, you know, he was thinking about it all night, how he could do that little trick.
Yeah, the 8-second rule became 8 hours, right?
I don't know. I have no idea what you just said. Okay.
I said the 8-second rule became 8 hours.
You know, oh, 8 seconds. Oh, you know what? Our delay here is 30 seconds, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's the longest delay I've ever seen in radio. So it's because they assume we don't know how to fix anything. So it gives us 30 seconds to find a sledgehammer and just beat the transmitter into a pulp before it goes out over the air.
Think of it as another form of quality control, right?
Yeah. We were talking about the
lightning and thunder. It was interesting because I was walking along the lakefront yesterday, and it started lightning, and then there was this incredible clap of thunder. I'm on the phone with my dad down in Florida. He goes, "Ricky, was that lightning I just heard?" I'm like, "No, Dad, you don't hear lightning. You see lightning, you hear thunder." And it was just funny the way he said it. He goes, "It sounded really loud," and obviously he didn't get what I was saying, so whatever.
Yeah, but that kind of response to your dad is grounds for being disowned, okay? It really is.
Yeah, there's certain people you could not get away with that kind of stuff, and I guess your parents is, basically falls in that category. But one of the reasons, Mike, that the lightning was so intense was the storm basically developed on a northeast to southwest line. It pretty much went over the same area for about 30 to 40 minutes, and it did what we call backbuild, which meant the rear part of the storm, it was almost like a freight train had two cars, and all of a sudden that freight train had three cars and then four cars and five cars, and where the cars kept getting latched onto the back of the train was basically over the north part of Chicago into about, I'd say, the Evanston, Skokie, Northbrook area. Because from where I was, you can see the lightning. Where you were, you were basically underneath the heavy rain and also the intense thunder. But it was quite an amazing storm for two reasons. We don't typically get warm and humid weather like that in the first weekend of October. And I think I've said it about a dozen times, is that the entire stretch of seasonal weather, beginning with last winter, started about a month late. Spring started about a month late. Summer started about a month late. And fall has been about a month late. So the weather that we've had around here the last two or three weeks is really something that you see more so the end of August and the early part of September. A lot of warm days, a lot of humid days, and not so much widespread, even rainfall like you typically get in late September into October and early November, but very localized heavy rain events. And because of that, we were talking about this earlier, the soil temperature, 74 degrees, I'll reiterate what I said earlier, 74 degrees, 4 inches under the ground at the Botanical Gardens, and underneath the sod, basically a thick layer of grass, Mike, it's 68 degrees. This is probably about 8 to 10 degrees warmer than it was last year at this particular time.
Wow. And I was aware that it was interesting. I was, as I said, the storm knocked out my internet. I mean, my internet gets knocked out if you look at it funny. And I won't mention the company because it's just my opinion. And I'm walking out of the Panera after getting the work done for the show, and I was just struck by how warm and humid it was, and I kept asking myself, is this October 3rd? Is this really October 3rd?
Yeah, and on top of that, I think we had flood warnings to the south of us.
Yep.
We had flood warnings to the north of us. Again, anywhere between 2 and 3 inches of rain came down. Bourbonnais, Oak Brook, basically east of Logan Square to about, say, the Evanston area, got about 2 to 2.5 inches of rain. A very narrow corridor, but this is something that we've seen going back now almost 3 to 4 weeks, basically eradicating any of the drought that we saw early in the year. And it's really interesting, Mike, because I just received in the mail yesterday a special supplement to the AMS Bulletin, that's American Meteorological Society, and the cover is explaining extreme events of 2012 from a climate perspective. And I haven't gotten a chance to even look at the table of contents, or at least look at the articles in detail, or at least we'll say peripheral way. But one of the editors of this particular bulletin is one of the TAs that I had at University of Wisconsin. His name is Marty Herling, and he actually wrote a very, very good paper on the fact that the big snows that we had a couple of years ago, remember that Snowmageddon that we had in Washington, D.C.? He wrote, this is the new norm. This is what we're going to be seeing, these heavy rain events, these periods of very intense dryness, these periods of very intense heat. And he said, even though we're thinking, okay, the atmosphere is warming, there were a lot of naysayers in Washington after we had all that snow. He goes, but you know what? The warmer temperatures provide more water vapor to the atmosphere, more heavy rain events and more snows. Get used to it. And in fact, I mentioned it before, it's part of the system that dumped up to 48 inches of snow in parts of Leeds, South Dakota.
was actually an ex-typhoon that moved all the way from the North Pacific.
Wow.
So again, it's these extreme high degrees of variability that we keep seeing, and hopefully in these articles there'll be some sort of knowledge platform that says how are these things happening, and is there anything that we could do at this point, basically just learning to live with it and mitigating it.
You know, while you were talking about how this storm has eradicated, eliminated our drought, Connor Shaw was in here shaking his head. Connor, do you care to explain?
Yeah, we got a half an inch out of that whole storm.
But so in Monee, it was a different story.
Right.
It seemed to be really spotty.
Yeah. So it's spotty down your way.
Down in Joliet, yeah.
But the drought conditions that we had, which were just on the minor edge of the drought, are now back to normal conditions. So we're out of the quote, drought category.
He's Connor's going to disagree with you. He's going to agree to disagree right there. He just keeps shaking his head.
I can send Connor information from the Climate Prediction Center.
I'd like to see that, actually. I got cracks in the ground 2 inches wide, and we even with the rain recently, they're not closing up for nothing.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm sure in certain areas of the Monee area it has been dry, but overall we've gotten out of what we describe as drought. Are we still dry in some areas? Yeah, without a doubt. But the overall large scale area, we've definitely gotten out of the.
All right. Well,
was going into a drought area.
All right. We have a disagreement on the drought and who's still in it, but. Before we do a forecast and I let you go, Rick, I'm kind of interested in the perspective of plant growers, Kelsey and Connor, about the warm temperatures at this time of year. What does that do for you? What does it do for people who might be interested in plants?
Well, what it does for us is, we're seeing normal shutdown because of the drought that we've had.
When you say normal shutdown, the plants starting to...
The plants are starting, the leaves are starting to fall. It doesn't seem to be any different than any other time. As far as the warmer soil temperatures that go, though, it does mean that if people were to plant plants, those roots have a longer time to get out because they're more active in a warmer soil.
Especially in areas that have gotten a little bit more water recently.
Right.
Yeah.
That help out significantly.
So like my neighborhood, this would be a great time to plant something.
Especially trees.
Yeah.
Even up to 2 inches, you'd probably be looking at pretty good root growth to finish off the year.
That's really good for people to hear who have been putting it off and weren't sure that October is a good time to do this.
Oh, there's a magic. If you're planting, there's a good. The good window is actually like September 15th through middle end of October for woody plants. You have a lot of good luck with that, especially, like I said, with the weather of recent anyway, and with the warm days, it's really helped out.
September 15th through?
Middle end of October.
Middle end of October. So it
seems to be where they push the most roots out.
You told me, Connor, it was at this conference we went to the other day. Connor and I were both at a conference at the Chicago Botanic Garden, which I'm going to get CLE credits for, right, Sarah? Okay.
Yep, you're good.
Okay, I'm good. You did a talk, and you... I don't know, it was in your talk or maybe you told me later, the best time to plant a tree is really July, August, if you can hydrate it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, even though this is a real good time of year to plant because our rains are better, if you have the water, you're actually better off planting a tree in July, August.
Yeah, and the reason is that you get that much more root growth because the plants are pretty much done growing from a top point of view. And their roots go out. But the problem is if you can't hydrate, they'll lose their leaves, and then you've lost whatever you've gained.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mr. DeMaio, you probably learned more about planting trees than you ever needed to know.
No, and you know what? You know, Connor is right because I was just looking at the Climate Prediction Center drought monitor, and still southern areas of Will County is still what we call moderate drought. So the part that I was talking about, Mike, was more so Cook County, City of Chicago, northern suburbs, we're now out of what's called moderate drought, but yeah, Connor is right. In areas southern Will County, particularly Kankakee County, still in a moderate drought.
Yeah, there we go.
I defer to science.
Yeah, we haven't had any significant rainfall at the farm until I guess you could call this significant, but we haven't had any significant rainfall at the farm for almost 9 weeks.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, well, you definitely missed out on the big ones, Connor, but hopefully there's another one coming.
Well, there's always another one coming.
Do me a favor. Use your powers to send one our way, will you?
We'll do what we can. Unfortunately, God and I are not on speaking terms at the moment, so it's probably not going to happen.
I'll work on that.
Okay, you do, Elisa.
God and I are fine.
All right, good. I'm glad somebody's fine with somebody in the room. So, Mr. DeMaio, what is our forecast?
Oh, you know what, Mike? It's amazing. Just clouds and a couple of sprinkles left over today. Nothing in the way of any significant rain. Mid-60s today, near 70 tomorrow, maybe a brief sprinkle. But other than that, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, basically sunny and dry weather, temperatures in the low to mid-70s. Evaporation rates this time of the year, much, much lower than they are about a month ago due to the fact that the sun angle is fairly low. So the rain that we've gotten in some areas is going to basically stay in the ground probably for the next week to 10 days, but areas down around where Connor is where they missed out on some of the heavy rain. Looks like evaporation rates a little bit higher and still nothing in any significant wet weather coming back at us anytime, probably for the next week, probably the next 6 to 7 days, Mike.
All right. And when does the cool weather hit?
You know what? We're not going to get into any substantial cool weather, I would say, at least until after the middle of October. That's because the pattern has been very active out across the North Pacific. A lot of these typhoons coming across the top into the Gulf of Alaska, keeping us in what we call modified Pacific flow. So normally this time of year, we see highs around 66 to 67. So I would say 5 to 8 degrees above average for the afternoon highs.
Wow.
Overnight lows with the clear skies probably getting down to near normal.
Okay. That is Rick DeMaio, our meteorologist extraordinaire, and he knows how to go to the facts and figures when he is contradicted on the radio and come up with the correct answer. And we always appreciate that.
Take care, Mike. Have a great week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, Rick.
And in the studio, again, Connor and Kelsey Shaw from Possibility Place Nursery in Moni, where they are still in moderate drought. But something you have in your favor, obviously, is that you grow native plants, trees and shrubs and a few other things. And are they not... Well, of course, they're young, since you're growing the young ones. Once a plant like that is established, it's able to withstand a drought a little better, is it not? What about the younger plants? Is it the same with any young plant that you just got to keep them hydrated to get them going and survive? They're pointing at you, take it. No, you take it. No, you take it.
Well, first of all, when you talk about native plants, it's a whole group of plants. Some of them are not suitable for drought. So depending on the species, you can have the savanna plants, floodplain plants. They're pretty well adapted to this. Woodland plants probably prefer not to be there.
And that's the deal is you're growing all kinds of plants, different areas for different regimes. Let's back up a little bit about your business. You started out as kind of a like everybody else, just, it was a farm at first, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a farm. And then you turned it into a retail operation?
No, I turned it into a nursery.
Oh, okay.
And we grew half of what the normal nurseries grew, and we grew half natives. And this was back in 1978. And then about 4 or 5 years into that, we switched almost entirely to natives.
Now, why was that? Because I heard you explain the other day that you kind of thought, well, I'm going to be stuck with all these native plants, but that really wasn't the case, was it?
No, we had some groups come in that were interested at that time in the trees in particular, and I thought, well, maybe this is a place we should go.
And that is what one of the things that sets you apart, isn't it? The fact that you do so much woody plant material, trees and shrubs?
Yeah, well, that and the fact that we collect it all as local as we can find it and then grow it on site rather than farm that particular operation out.
Does that make it – I tell people that. Now I need to know, verify it. When you tell people where was it grown, does it really make a difference?
Well, actually, the seed is – much of it is even collected in Will County, and then it's actually grown on our premises.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not only it's locally collected as well as locally grown.
Well, when you say locally, you have what, 100, 150-mile radius that you're working with?
Basically, yes.
We do have a couple of outliers, things that are, you know, suitable for our local habitat and climate. But at the same time, we grow them strictly for fun. We try and keep it, what is it, like 90% is upper Midwest material. We have a couple of outliers, but we keep it native to the United States.
Mm-hmm. So what is that like? You hop into the truck with a couple of paper bags?
Basically.
And really?
Yeah, but it's like a friend of mine described it as a sickness. You just can't keep your hands from grabbing hold of things when you see it, you know. And
but in your case, seeds.
Yeah, in our case, seeds. And, I've got plastic bags and the bins in my car and in pockets everywhere. I come home and I got seed in pockets and coats and everything like that. And it's kind of a problem, I guess, when you're doing the laundry.
Well, did you ever get a jacket that you haven't worn in a few months and you go in a pocket and, oh, my God, I didn't store that seed.
Too often.
Yeah. And can you identify it?
Yeah, well, I knew where I collected it, too. It's like you can say, oh, that tree produced that particular year.
If it's not marked on the package?
Yeah, it's a sickness, I'm telling you. So it's just like you look at it, you're like, I know exactly where that is. And, yesterday I grabbed a pair of shorts to go do a thing and threw my hand in a pocket. Next thing I know, I pull out a handful of hickory nuts. So it's like, oh, well, how about that? Forgot to turn those in. Oops.
Well, see, I feel so much better now about my whole life just listening to you guys. I mean, we all have our issues, but how many people, usually for me, it's just Kleenex. Sarah's raising her hand. What are you in your pocket, Sarah?
I couldn't help myself from collecting all this bundle flower seeds.
It's a pretty plant, isn't it?
Bundle flower seeds.
Yeah.
I'm not even familiar with that. This
beautiful whorled, gnarled seed head.
It kind of reminds me of a rose. Really tiny, like your tea rose. It looks like a tea rose, only it's green and kind of curled up. I kind of like them. They're cool.
And I couldn't
Mike, it's the dismanthus. I'm surprised you don't know this.
Dismanthus?
Oh, yeah. I am being busted on my own radio show here.
Of course, we all know I don't know. Yeah. I have to look it up.
Yeah, it's because she's on the computer there and looking at these things. Now, do people call you and say, hey, Connor, hey, Kelsey, I've got this tree. I think you should collect seeds from it. Does that sort of thing happen?
They call us, but a lot of times they'll just bring it in. They're like, here, I've got a box of seed for you. It's like, where did it come from? Well, I had it in my yard. Or I was out at so-and-so's place and I grabbed it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay.
What do you need to worry about if somebody brings in seed like
where
that?
The source.
The source. You'd like to have a native source.
Yeah,
you don't want it planted,
especially with the way the nursery.
Wait! You don't want it planted versus. I'm sorry.
Well, in other words, we don't want it from nursery stock that was brought in and planted.
Could be from California, Oregon,
or wherever, because we would prefer it to be native origin. And then we have a whole.
Yeah, but you don't know if a tree was planted 20 or 30 years ago.
You do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can look at it and know. It depends on the types of situation, the kind of home it's in front of. There's a lot you can tell just by the situational planting of a particular tree.
Yeah, humans tend to plant in straight lines and have certain.
Well, what if there's just one in a front yard and it's very large?
Then you're talking about years before the house was built.
Yeah. So that's one of it's invested. It's an investigation. It's like
it's a little bit of investigative work.
Little CSI stuff, right there.
I wouldn't go that far.
Except that you use your knowledge of how trees grow, how people plant them, what kind of species are used in what kind of situations, and what would be an example of a tree that you really weren't sure of that you might have encountered recently? You're kind of going
any maple,
any. Why?
Because maple, Acer in general is widely used in the industry. Lots of people.
Acer, by the way, is the genus.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's okay. I just want our people listening to know.
But it's a widely planted species, mm-hmm. and the range on particular species is very, very wide. Like red maple is. That covers a large area of the country, and that seed could have come from Kentucky. It could have come from Ohio. It could have come from Illinois. But where did the original come in? And not only that, but could have been grafted. Is it a cultivar?
Mm-hmm.
Where is that coming from? So being able to find that in native habitat is far more desirable than collecting that out of somebody's yard, especially if it's completely planted where it's not supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Maple, red maple, you're going to be finding more in, you know, more hydrated areas in our, and locally. You're not going to find it up on top of a hill.
I think that's an important point. When you're looking at plant material and you want to know if it's been planted or not, and if it's out of its ecotype, that's a pretty good indication that it was planted. Because you'll find a lot of pin oak, which actually belong in floodplains and swamps, planted in people's yards.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's part of it. And that's one of the things you look at.
This is just amazing stuff. In the studio, I have Kelsey Shaw and Connor Shaw from Possibility Place Nursery. Who does this besides you? I mean, do you know of other people in the area and across the country who do this kind of hop in the truck with the seed packs in the pockets?
Oh, they're crazy people everywhere. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We know a few of them.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. But as far as nursery growers, they're not as common as you think. You know, a lot of people will bring them in. There'll be whip growers in particular areas that will travel great distances to get seed from particular areas to have that in the repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
But, by and large, most of our local nurseries usually buy in whips or starter plants or something like that and load on.
And you guys have developed a technique in your nursery over the years that you think, you and I have had this conversation before, Connor, where people say, well, I don't want to put an oak in my yard because it takes too long for them to grow. And you say, that's not true. Not if you buy one of ours. I want to get into that. What makes that different? I also want people to call in if they got questions about native plants, specifically trees and shrubs, although you do handle a few other kinds of natives. What other kinds of natives do you do?
We handle prairie, savanna, and woodland herbaceous material.
Quite a bit.
And I got to tell you, the biggest challenge out of all the plant material we raise is the woodland herbaceous.
Pain in the butt.
Yeah.
And why is that, Kelsey?
Well, one, finding a native seed source, and two, that seed can sit dormant for a very long time, even in the greenhouse. It can take its time. The Solomon seal. That takes 3 years, really, before that plant is saleable. First year, it just comes up. It looks kind of like a little green feather sticking up out of the ground, and that's it. And it'll do that for 2 years, and then all of a sudden, it'll start to come up. First year, it'll be, first year to saleable. People are like, I'm not going to buy that. It's too small. You know, by the third, fourth year, then all of a sudden it's big enough where people, that's a plant.
And to give you an idea, a lot of the prairie plants, it's within 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Ah.
It's very, very quick.
So you're actually handling that plant for 3 years before it's large enough for the consumer to consider it viable.
You know, I understand your pain, if only because I tried this once, all right, which is I had cyclamen.
Yeah.
That, not florist cyclamen, because that's the stuff you buy and you give to grandma on her birthday and you can't put it outside because you'll kill it. But there's cyclamen you can grow outdoors in this area, and I decided I was going to germinate it from seed.
How'd that go?
It said put the thing in a dark place and then come back in a few months. So I did, and I kept it just hydrated enough in a closet in my house. Sure enough, 6 months later, this little tiny shoots came up, and I grew the plants, and I grew them, and I got them in pots, and I took them out in the yard, and I planted them, and they started to do okay, and then I had to move something, and I had to dig them up and put them in a pot. I lost track of the pot and lost them after I had done all that work for like a year and a half worth of first germinating, then growing. And I was kicking myself. It's just, how stupid can you be to lose track of what pot you had these things in? But I can see the difficulty in growing plants like that, because sometimes the germination takes a long time, and as you say, sometimes for them to look like a plant takes years.
Yeah.
Well, and part of the reason for that is that they generally grow only in the spring, and then when the woodlands close in over the top of them, they're done. So they really only have a half a growing season compared to things in the sun.
Right, ephemerals. Right.
Yeah, they'll melt out, and basically, people have a hard time taking it on faith. There's just a plant in that little pot that they just bought. You know, especially when it's just nothing but dirt, and they're looking at it.
Like, well, and you gave me one here, but which is not one of those ephemerals. But we've got dirt on the floor here in the studio now.
Yeah, the Cario Vada, the ceiling.
Well, no, we don't.
Oh, it's cleaned up. Oh, no, somebody cleaned it up. How about that? What's the tree you gave me?
The Cario Vada?
Shagbark hickory.
Nobody knows what a Cario Vada is, Kelsey. I don't even know what that is.
Common names can be kind of confusing.
I know. No, and you really have to go by the Latin names.
You try
Shagbark,
to.
Shagbark hickory. You do as best as... Well, if you just say maple, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People know.
And you got 20 years before you'll see a shag.
Yeah, it'll be a long time coming before that thing actually looks like
a shagbark. I've got to figure out where to put that.
You can put it anywhere want because it's not going to grow very fast.
Was that one 2 years old or is that a 1 year old?
That's a 1 year old.
So this is a 1 year old. How long will it take before it gets to be?
A foot tall?
A foot tall.
I give it about 5 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, he's kidding. No. You should be able to get that in about 2 years.
Okay. And then to my height, 6 feet tall.
Well, if you put it in an east face, half day sun, fairly well drained in good soil, what do you figure? 5, 6 years?
Yeah, 5 years.
Yeah.
And see, and that's the problem with some of the natives, though, that people, they want that instant gratification with a tree they plant. I want, in 5 years, I don't want to be able to see my neighbors. And I don't know why they always want to hide their neighbors. It just seems like we're not friendly anymore, but...
Well, I think part of that, you know, the instant gratification is one thing, but you kind of see it where the things that are specced in landscape are much larger than things like Cario Vada would be available. You know, they're specking 2-inch caliper, and 2-inch caliper can take, you know, a decade to produce.
Yeah.
And there's not many nursery people out there that are willing to
produce. And then you produce a 2-inch caliber, and as you dig it up, you take off a lot of the roots, not on purpose.
If you grow it traditionally.
Yeah. But not the way you do. And we're going to talk about that, right?
But it's funny about shagbark hickory. Even though it has a taproot and all the things associated with hard to transplant, it does seem to transplant reasonably well, but it will sit there for years before it recovers from transplant shock.
It sulks.
It sulks, yeah, big time.
Oh, sorry to hear that. Well, not this one because it's tiny.
Right.
I got to figure out a place to put that. All right, we will get back to Kelsey and Connor from a possibility place. 773-763-9278 is our phone number. David is on the line. We'll get to him in just a second. Speaking of seeds and that sort of thing, D. Landreth Seed Company wants to tell you about a couple of bulbs that will make your garden stand out next spring. I'm going to try to pronounce these. Allium rosenbachianum, I think I got that right, and yellow hoop petticoat narcissus bulbocodium conspicuous. Conspicuous. Wow. See, and even Kelsey's looking at me like, I don't know what you're talking about. We're talking, the alliums are garden divas, because if you have them in your garden, they will most certainly draw all the attention. They were first collected at Merv, Turkmenistan in 1883 by Edmund O'Donovan, a foreign correspondent assigned to the region. This is the largest of the heirloom giant alliums. It will grow to 36 to 48 inches high, and its globe will be 5 to 8 inches in diameter. Alliums are very deer, squirrel, chipmunk, rabbit, groundhog, and woodchuck resistant. Now, the daffodil is a tiny, tiny plant that grows to at most 6 inches in height, but it's so unusual in its color. Blossom is so startlingly can't even say that. Yellow, and its little hoop petticoats are so darn cute that this little piece of spring will steal your heart and never give it back. So you can get both of these bulbs by going to LandrethSeeds.com or go to their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., or call 800-654-2407. 800-654-2407, D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seed since 1784.
Hi, this is Ron Calvio from Mighty House. Are you looking for a new ride? Looking for a cool ride? Looking for a ride that you can plug in so you can flip off the guy at the gas station? Well, here's your chance to get one for as little as $40. The Illinois Solar Energy Association is raffling off a 2014 Chevy Volt, and only 3,000 tickets will be sold. So how do you win? Go to IllinoisSolar.org and click on the link to the Chevy Volt raffle. You can buy one ticket for $40, two tickets for $60, or four tickets for $100. All raffle proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout the state of Illinois. The winner will be drawn at the ISEA member meeting on December 7th, 2013. Again, that's IllinoisSolar.org to buy your tickets and to get all the small print details.
A couple of things here. I got a couple of tweets from Rob, Cope Dog, Rob Carthal, who is not in studio, but he's tweeting away. He said, first of all, he said, gardeners who want instant gratification should stick to microgreens. that's not a bad thing. I kind of think that makes sense. And he also tweets, I used to get excited when I found $20 in a pocket. Now I have seeds in my jackets, jeans, dashboard, notebooks, etc. So, you know, some people get excited when they find money. And
I feel his pain.
I guess he's one of you guys.
Don't sit funny.
Yeah. Here's a tip from the care of trees. We were talking tree planting here at the beginning of October. It's still a great time to plant trees in the fall. The fairly stable air and soil temperatures, warm this year, and favorable soil moisture levels, unless you're in a moderate drought, they promote good root development. Here are some suggestions about planting trees. Do your homework before buying. You know, one of the things you could do is call Possibility Place and or go online and see what they have available. And you can do that by going to possibilityplace.com. Now, you need to know, are you looking for a large shade tree or a small ornamental tree? Know your soil conditions, the soil texture, moisture, pH, very important, and how much room is available above, to the side, and below. Watch out. You don't want to be digging into power lines or anything else below. And you will want to know what tree works best there. Be sure to locate any underground utilities, as I said, that may be present and understand how to plant your tree properly. When digging, a wide, shallow hole is better than a deep, narrow hole. And that's just sort of a general big-time rule of thumb. But to find out more about the water needs for your trees and planting your trees, contact a certified arborist at The Care of Trees. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
MC doesn't know anything about planting trees. Yeah, it's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I have how much of the Connor family here in the studio? Is it half? Is it?
Well, it used to be half. Now it's, I don't know, a third, quarter.
It's getting bigger and bigger, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Kelsey and Connor are here. All right, very quickly, as we got to get Dave's phone call, and I want to talk about that conference you and I went to because it's pretty interesting stuff. What is the difference in the way you grow your trees from other outfits?
You're the grower. I'm just a botanist.
Just a botanist. Well, la-di-da.
He brings me the seed and makes me work. The difference is, that for all intents and purposes, we start our plant material from start to finish, and we pay particular attention to root pruning on a continuous basis as the plant progresses through the system that we have. So it's actually never out of being root pruned. And by root pruning, it enables us to get a more dense root, particularly on plants that tend to be a little more difficult to transplant, like Baroque and the like.
So does root pruning stimulate root growth? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it does. And yeah. In other words, you, in some way or other, you inhibit the tip from proceeding, either by drying it or mechanically, and then as soon as it stops, within 4 inches of that root stopping its growth, we get new roots that proliferate, and then we start all over again.
Do other people know this?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of literature.
I'm sure there's literature. Yeah,
there's
on
literature
it.
Out there. And
so why isn't it done the way you do it?
I don't know. I mean, there are.
We've been asking that for years.
Yeah. And there's some excellent growers, but they tend to be in the South that are doing this.
But not, I mean, not up our way.
No, there's some big growers in the South doing this.
There's a couple up our way. But just, I don't know.
But they're all small.
Yeah, they're all very small.
All right, let me ask you a question here. If somebody's listening to this and they've been growing some things from seed and they want to make them grow faster, would you advise them to do some root pruning? Or is it too dangerous to tell an amateur that
might take their hand off or something? Like, no, I don't know.
No. We actually encourage people to grow it that way. Mm-hmm. And when we talk to different groups, we show them and tell them how we do it and encourage them to try and do it that way. Mm-hmm. And some of them do it that way and have a great time, and others, obviously, it's tough.
Yeah.
And if somebody's really interested, if they really want to learn, they can pick up Carl Whitcomb's book. And
what's the name of the book? Carl Whitcomb?
Carl Whitcomb is the guy who developed the system that we grow in.
Okay.
And
he's got four or five books out there.
He's got four or five books out there.
I bet one of our wonderful staff here will will find that
It's a heavy book. I don't recommend it for people who do it lightly, mostly because I
You mean there's lots of words and few pictures?
Well, no, there's plenty of both, but it's more like, it's deep. As far as, if you really like to get into roots, it's pretty deep.
All right. Speaking of roots and deep, let's get in. We're not going to get in over our heads. Let's go to the phones and bring in David. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Yeah. Greetings, Mike and your guest. You know, I wanted to get thicker and deeper. So, hey, you know, my mother and sister are involved in a thing called Wild Ones, group that encourages native plants around the country. And I living out here in California, you know, we're facing the idea that Fukushima hazardous wastes are making their way to California, and so we better protect our seed stock as well as our spawning grounds for various types of fishing and various kinds of fish. So the whole idea of being able to look at the idea of protecting what we have left. So I'm thinking in terms of if people were to attempt to grow, you've got the Chicago area, which is basically suburbs and people living in apartment buildings, could they grow seed stock? And then when they go out hiking, go out and disperse seeds into areas that we have a very popular thing out here called guerrilla gardening, and people are making a point to go out into the countryside with seed stock and reforest or replant what the cattle ate up about 100 years ago. So I'm just wondering if if you have kind of an encouragement of guerrilla gardening in that way.
I'd have to. I encourage guerrilla gardening urbanly. However, when you're doing the kind of thing that you're talking about, you have to be very careful. If you're not collecting it from a particular local area that you're going to be dispersing in, you must know what the plant's habit, its particular ecology would be. If it's even a good idea to spread it into a particular area where it may have never been before. So it's best to know what you're spreading before you spread it, if you're going to do that. I don't recommend doing it in nature preserves or protected areas in any way, mostly because there's a lot of work that's being done on that by the people that are working the sites already. And I would encourage people that if you are going to be taking, this kind of practice up, to be very responsible and knowledgeable about the plants that you're going to be handling before you do it. Does that help a little?
Well, sure, yeah. I'm thinking in terms of Utah and places, I used to live in St. Louis, so I'm pretty familiar with Midwest. There's a sort of a lushness that you can just take as a standard. But when you go out to a place like Utah and you read the old Pioneer books, they had 10-foot grasses. And when you drive through Utah today, you're seeing an endless desert. But those 10-foot grasses were eaten up within probably a couple or few decades by the cattle. Same with Texas. They had as high as 16-foot grasses, as I understand it, prehistoric grasses, you know, that had never been cut down, so to speak, in thousands of years, even maybe a fire or two. But the idea that to reestablish that is going to take a huge amount, because the water has been sold from, you know, commodities brokers have been buying the water from Utah, and the idea of reforesting or reestablishing their plains is going to be tough just in trying to capture the water to be able to do it. So.
Yeah, but you still need to, again, if you're going to be doing stuff like this, you need to be as responsible as possible. And just spreading these things and getting them back out there, you know, it's not just the professionals that should be involved. You know, it should be the community, obviously. But when you're doing that kind of a thing, and you have to be sure about what you're doing before you do it.
And David, that's a provocative question, and one we can't really answer here. But I appreciate you calling in, and you have a great Sunday.
Yeah, same to you.
All right, bye bye. 773-763-9278. Let me do this. John from Zion is on the phone. Hang on, John. I'm going to get to you in just a second with Connor and Kelsey Shaw. Bertolt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village reminds you that fall is the perfect time for planting. Soil we've said this all show. Soil temperatures are still warm and the air temps remain moderate. Right now is also the time to take advantage of Bertolt's fall clearance sale. Check this out. Trees and shrubs are 50% off. Rose bushes, ground covers, perennials, 50% off. Fruit trees and berries, you guessed it, 50% off. Select flowering tropical plants are 75% off. And citrus trees are 75% off. Obviously, they're not going to stay out over the winter. You're going to bring them indoors and have them beautify your home. Select statuary, 50% off. Grass seed, 35% off. And last but not least, gift Halloween items, 25% off. And it's not even Halloween yet. Need to decorate for fall? At Bertolt's, you'll find an assortment of mums, pansies, accent plants, plus a variety of pumpkins, unique gourds, corn stalks, and straw. So stop by Bertolt's Garden Center, 434 East Avon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. Look for the iconic windmill out front or go to bertoltsgardencenter.com. Bertolt's, get green. Let's get growing.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Just a reminder that there are only 25 shopping days until Halloween. Darn it. Okay. Look, if I don't keep track of these things, who will? It's also a reminder that there are a couple of tasks you need to get done in your garden this month, including planting bulbs and dividing perennials, which is why you want a copy of the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. CGM has a spring bulb planting primer. And remember what I told you a few weeks ago. A primer is an introductory book. A primer is what you paint on your walls. Just ask Ron Cowgill. All of the usual suspects are there. Tulips, daffodils, alliums, hyacinths, and crocuses, and some not-so-usual suspects like winter aconite, fritillaria, and wood hyacinths. As for dividing plants, they walk you through the process, so you'll have plenty of new plants in the spring. Then there's my column on the inside back page. It's a primer that any six-year-old can understand. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Go to Chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600. We're coming into the home stretch of the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Okay, real quickly here, Connor, you and I need to talk because about this, and we'll get to John in just a second. But this conference that you and I went to at the Chicago Botanic Garden on Thursday was kind of an eye opener, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I thought it was extremely well done, and yes, it was a very big eye opener.
And talking about the plants that a lot of people in the industry use and sell, plants that folks listening probably have in their yard, like barberry, like euonymus, the other term, burning bush, plants like oriental bittersweet. Calorie pear. All right, which everybody loves because in the spring it has all these beautiful white blooms. But we sat there, Connor and I, watched these displays that showed these papers and people had done these studies that show that stuff's popping up everywhere. And what was scary about it was the cultivars themselves don't produce offspring. But if the cultivars end up matching up with another cultivar, they produce offspring. That was disturbing to me because it shows we really don't know how to control this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think the other thing that intrigued me the most was the number of what Wisconsin is doing about it, and the nursery industry in Wisconsin is starting to pay big time attention to what's going on, and I thought that was very, very interesting, because for a long time we've been talking about invasive plants and it's sort of been given lip service, but now actually shove's coming to push, and a lot of more interest is being generated by the industry.
Yeah, the fact that the industry was represented here and they are paying attention to it is a good sign. I mean, you still see barberry all over the place in all kinds of, you know, not only box stores, but independent garden centers.
Well, some of that doesn't, because a lot of that has to do with kind of like buyer apathy, too. They see their neighbors got it. And I know you rail against it a little bit, you know, if you see what your neighbors plant and plant something else, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a lot of buyer apathy when it comes to that type of planting as well.
And I was just checking my email here, and Charlotte Edelman, who's the co-author of the Midwest Native Garden, who was at the conference, she said, she said it was an eye-opener, and she said the group's view seems to be that it is acceptable and even desirable to fill Midwestern landscapes and gardens with, quote, sterile, non-native invasive cultivars. And I think one of the things that was kind of being pointed out is, how do you know something's sterile? It's sterile at one point, but then something happens and it's not sterile anymore. So I think that our whole conception of that is still not quite as accurate as it could be.
Yeah, and there was a big push for them to try and find triploids, chromosomes, so that they would be sterile, which...
Explain what a triploid is in 25 words or less, please.
It basically has three sets of chromosomes, and they tend to be sterile. The only problem is that none of those plants have been developed yet.
Yeah, so there's that goal, and in the meantime, we have these plants that are getting out there. So, Mike, my kudos to Kathy McGlynn and the folks at the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership, NIIPP. You can go to their website, which is NIIPP.net. Do we have time for let's see how quick we can do this. John and Zion, you're on the Mike Novak Show. We got about a minute and a half left.
Okay, I got a two-part question here. I've got volunteer oak trees. They're on the driveway growing, and I want to find out if they'll survive in flower pots over the wintertime without dying, you know, by freezing.
Okay, we'll hit that right off the bat. You got to protect the roots. They can't go down below 20 degrees, so you're going to have to, if you are going to have them in flower pots, you have to mulch them.
Could I put them in the basement?
You could. My dad always did that with his fig tree, and then he remembered about a month too late, and we had to go down to the basement and haul this thing out, which had white leaves all over it, and took about a month to recover. So basically, if you do put them in the basement, you got to keep them, make sure the roots stay moist, and then the basement may be too warm, and they may try to grow. So you really prefer to keep them outside and mulched.
All right, the other question real quick, John.
The other question is, I'm transplanting these trees up north in pine trees. Is acidity going to kill the trees eventually?
Are the pine trees in sand?
No, the pine.
I'll tell you what. We're running out of time here. Here's what I'm going to do. John, send me your email. I'm going to get it to the question to Connor and Kelsey, and they will answer that personally for you. We're flat out of time. Real quickly, for the pumpkin contest last week, the winner was at 1546 pounds. That's a new Illinois record, Jeff Shinoa. So congratulations to him. Wow. Connor and Kelsey, I know. Wow.
That's a big pumpkin.
Thanks. Yes, it is a big pumpkin. All right. Thank you so much for coming in. Go to my website for all the information. Go green or
go home.
Go home.
That's what they say.